Good afternoon. I have an interview here that I did with Wilbur Smith, the South African best-selling author, back in 2011. I was very sad to read over the weekend that he died at the age of 88. We're going over to the UK now to introduce Wilbur Smith, global number one bestseller, having sold over 120 million copies worldwide. He was born in Central Africa in 1933, and after the successful publication of When the Lion Feeds in 64, he became a full-time writer. He's since written over 30 novels, the latest being Those in Peril. Welcome to the book show, Wilbur Smith. Hi.
Hi, Hannah. I'm delighted to be able to speak to you.
Oh, we're very happy you're able to join us. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm literally going to start right at the beginning because I was really shocked to read in your biography that at the age of 18 months you were struck down by cerebral malaria and the doctors told your parents that it was probably better if you died.
That's what happened, yes, because in those days, you know, we're talking about a long time ago, the treatment of tropical diseases was not very efficient. So the cerebral obviously attacks the brain, and he said to my mother, better if he dies, because otherwise he's going to be touched in the head. You know, he might have a disability that prevents him talking or blinds him or anything like that. And of course he was right. Something was touched in my head. It was the little switch that the malaria switched on in my head that made me dream up stories.
Because your mother really did influence you as a reader, first of all, didn't she?
She certainly did. You know, we were living in the bush in Central Africa, so we had radio, but there was certainly no such thing as television around. And so it was every evening when it was bedtime for me and my sister, we were tucked into bed, and then Mom read stories to us. And she read them so beautifully, you know, she made the stories come alive in my imagination. And I was fascinated how she just had this thing in her hand, which was a book, and how all these wonderful stories came from it. You know, it was a magical box for me.
And again, then your English master at boarding school was a major influence and support for you at the beginning.
Yes, he certainly was. I wasn't terribly good in other disciplines like sciences and mathematics. So I made it up by being, top of the school virtually in English language and essay. And the man you are speaking about, who is long passed away, he was fascinated with some of the stories that I wrote from the essay I wrote, and so he encouraged me in every possible way.
Whereas your father, when you told him that you were going to be a journalist, called you a bloody fool.
Typical of Papa, that's the kind of guy he was. Yes, he said, you know, you're going to starve to death if you try and do that. Why don't you get a real job, you know? And for my father, the real job was building houses or railway lines or all of the other things that you could see happening, you know. But journalism, you're playing around with words, you know, it's a Ponzi thing to do.
But from when you first started, you were really successful. I mean, the money that you earned when doing journalism initially was really good, wasn't it?
I started on short stories, really, and had some of those in my shortened circumstances of that time. It was very handy, you know. I'd get £60 or £100 for an article, which is equivalent of several thousand pounds today. And but I really wanted to write fiction, and it was only when I was 28 that I made my first attempt at a full-length novel. And I'm happy to say that it was never published, because it was a typical first novel, and I made all the mistakes of that a first-time writer usually does make, and I got them out of my system. And the book was never published, and there's only one ragged copy of it is still in existence. So then I realized that I was never going to be a writer, so I sat around and went on with the job I was doing, which I was an accountant. And then the lady who I'd originally sent the book to was my agent. She wrote to me again and she said, you know, that first book really had so much promise in it. You must go on writing. And so that's what I did. And I wrote a book called When the Lion Feeds. And I've been unemployed ever since.
And with getting that first book published, it went really well. I mean, she tried to negotiate with the publishing house and said, OK, we want this, we want this, we want this. And he came back and offered more than she asked for.
That's correct, yes. And the man that did that was a gentleman called Charles Pick. And he was one of the doyens of the publishing trade in England. And he and I formed a very, very close relationship. And afterwards, when he retired from being a publisher, he became my agent. And that relationship lasted until his death in 1999.
And looking at your career and looking at all the books you've written, some have been standalone novels and some have been part of various different series. Before you go to write a book, have you already decided whether it's going to be part of a series or not? I mean, when you're starting a new title, obviously.
Yes, I have an outline in my head, and sometimes it fits into in with previous books that I've written in a series. But then, like this new one that's just being published now, Those in Peril, it's something that just strikes me as a single story. Sometimes those single stories that I write become series because the characters, I become so familiar with them and my readers like them so much that, you know, I carry on with their life story, or they become prequels, you know, what the characters were doing before their initial appearance in one of my novels.
And at the top of the press release for this new book, Those in Peril, it says, "Think you know Wilbur Smith? Think again." Does that mean this is incredibly different to what people are used to reading?
I think it is different. It's not incredibly different. I think it has my mark, you know, my sort of trademark mark on it. It's got strong characters and a very, very powerful love story running through it. And again, as with most of my stories, it's about people in very difficult and dangerous circumstances, caught up in some plot or caught up in some circumstances that they have to try and find a way out of it. You know, I place incredible obstacles in their path and they have to be clever enough to find a way around or over the top.
It's got pirates in this one, hasn't it? There's a kidnapping that takes place.
It's set in the Indian Ocean in a very sort of at the moment a hot spot in the news, and everybody is interested in the Somalian pirates. But I've been thinking about the book for some while. I was fortunate enough to own a part of an island in the Seychelles group. And this is the area that I am writing about in this book, so I know it extremely well. And I had a very nice setup on the island, and I had all my diving gear and boats, and it was a very elaborate little enclave of my own, a hideaway, and I had everything from desalination plants to electrical generators and diving equipment and pumps for pumping up the tanks. And I spent a lot of time down there, and I had actually first-hand contact with the Somalian pirates. One of the my boatman was a Somalian, and we were returning from a fishing trip one day, and as we ran into Mahe Harbour, there was another boat coming out. It was an open boat with two big outboard motors on the back and about six people in it, and they were men, and I could tell immediately that they were Nilotic people. You know, they have a special look, the Ethiopians and the Somalians and those people from the Nile Valley. And as we passed each other, there was no sort of waving or smiling, and they just looked at me with a stony look on their faces. And in fact, the one, thinking back on it now, the one pirate looked at me like a leopard looking at a gazelle, you know. And I turned to Ahmet, my boatman, and I could see he was very perturbed. And I said, "Who are these people?" And he said, "I will tell you later." And then he, when we returned to my island, he explained to me that these were pirates, and they weren't actually hunting. They came into Mahe to revictual, to reprovision, but they were going out again to go and hijack and capture the ships at sea. So this is what made me thinking, and you know, and the whole plot worked around it.
Mm.
And so it was very easy to write.
So complete first-hand research then.
I think, like most of my books, I only write about things that I know. Now, people ask me, "How many people have you got researching for you?" And I say, "One, me." Mm. And they say, "How long does it take you to research a book?" I say, "Well, 70 years, you know, my whole life." Because I'm born, as you know, born in Africa and lived in Africa, and I know Africa intimately.
Yeah, I mean, you are well known for your meticulous research, for sure. And just wanted to ask you one other thing with all the different books that you've written as the years go on, and as the different books come out, do you think it gets easier writing each book, or possibly slightly harder?
The words come easily to my mind, but you know, it's I haven't got the energy that I had when I started out at the age of 29, and so I like to have longer periods in between books where I can do other things. And you know, I'm sort of pacing myself now. People say, "Are you going to retire? When are you going to retire?" And I said, "Well, probably when they put me in the box and carry me down into the cemetery, my hand will come out, a bony claw will come out from under the lid, and write on the side of the coffin, 'The End.'" But you know, I think that's bravado. You know, the time will come when I will have to stop.
Well, all your fans and readers will be very sad when that day comes. Yeah. I know they're very much looking forward to reading the new book. It's called Those in Peril, and we'll be putting it up on our website very shortly, so listeners can get a copy from there. And to find out more information about you and all your books, the website is www.wilbursmithbooks.com. Wilbur Smith, thanks so much for joining us on the book show today.
Lovely talking to you, Hannah. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Gosh, how poignant was that? The last bit talking about death and the day when he has to stop writing. Wow. That was an interview that I did with Wilbur Smith, the best-selling South African author, 10 years ago. In 2011 was when we did that interview, and sadly, he died over the weekend at the age of 88.